Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. A really busy episode for you today on Monday, August the 5th. And we're going to start off with news that staff at a family hub in Margate say plans to cut more than half of their funding will be a huge blow for the community. The Millmead site employs 27 paid workers as well as 7 volunteers, providing support for parents, people with mental health issues and domestic abuse victims. Now, Kent County Council fund more than 50% of its operations, but they've launched a consultation on plans not to renew the agreement. Local Democracy reporter Gabriel Morris has been speaking to Chloe Matthews. She got support from Millmead Family Hub during her teenage pregnancy and now works in the pantry.
I just feel like this building and everyone within it has been here for such a long time. It has become the heart of Millmead. Like, Millmead has been a big area that's always looked down upon, it's always judged, and it's really not as bad as anyone says it is. But here makes it warm, it makes it welcoming, it makes it homely.
And how did you feel when you heard about this consultation?
Yeah, I cried to my line manager. I think it would have a massive impact. There is so many families in this community that do rely on the centre for so many different reasons.
Now, council bosses say they desperately need to save money, and there's another site nearby that provides similar support. Jan Collins works at Millmead Family Hub and says it's too far away for local parents.
I think one is 1.5 miles. I think that people misunderstand what poverty does. Very often, they won't be able to do that because they're looking after their children and they're tired. Very few people have cars and the bus service is appalling here.
Now, KCC insists they will continue to provide essential services for families and young people in the area, but Labour councillor Barry Lewis says they're making a mistake by closing the family hub.
Yeah, they give £225,000 and that's a bargain, because if this shuts, it's going to cost much more than that in safeguarding issues. It's going to cost the NHS millions of pounds, because people, this is their first port of call if there's a problem.
We'll keep you updated on that story. You can also watch Gabriel's report by clicking on the KMTV pages of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A Kent teenager faces more time behind bars after being found to have downloaded and shared child abuse images. Jack Usher is already serving a sentence for a sex attack on a woman in Woodland on Romney Marsh. The 19-year-old who used to live at Marsh Crescent admitted possessing the pictures. He's due to be sentenced later this month. Two men have been arrested following reports of an armed robbery at a post office in Thanet. Staff at the store on Ramsgate Road in Broadstairs were allegedly threatened with a knife before cash was stolen. The suspects left the scene on a moped. An Ashford man who crashed into a parked car after going out for birthday drinks has been given a driving ban. Stephen Ratcliffe was found to be over the limit when police were called to the collision in January. The 51-year-old from Beaver Lane won't be able to get behind the wheel for 2 years. He's also been told to do unpaid work. A motorcyclist who died in a crash near Canterbury has been described as a true gentleman. Russell Brown passed away in hospital 7 days after being involved in a collision with a Range Rover on the A257. The 58-year-old sister-in-law is Natalie Newbury.
He was kind, he was loving, he was full of life, he loved to sing, he loved to dance. He was the love of my sister's life, and they had a true love for each other that nothing can ever, ever take away. We're all truly, truly heartbroken, and we feel like we've all got a hole in our heart at the minute.
We really appreciate Natalie taking time to speak to the podcast. Crash investigators do still want to hear from any witnesses. Now, a developer has been criticised by parents as a children's play area in Dartford remains fenced off for the second consecutive summer. People living in Baker Crescent are now calling on the local council to take action. Well, our reporter Keely Greenwood has been chatting to mums Louise Bonello and Jasmine Jackson.
It's just disgraceful, really. Chris have had so much time to be able to fix the park and haven't done anything about it after constantly being chased and spoken to. They're happy to take the money when they build the houses. Why the hell aren't they resolving the problem? Like, we've got a park that's been inaccessible to our children for the best part. Well, it's actually been longer than than 2 years. So probably about 3-4 years now, because it was broken beforehand. It just needs to be resolved.
And then when you first moved here, you were one of the first people here, you said, yes. And they said there was going to be a park. So yes. Were you sort of pleased about that, having little children?
Yes, absolutely thrilled. And when my children were younger,
nice
we spent so much time here. It's not fair on the residents that have young children that can't access the park. Mm. Also, my children are older, but they would still like to play in here. They come down and play football with their friends. They can't access it. It's just disgraceful.
And it's just somewhere to just meet up and chat. Like yeah. One of the mums was saying, sometimes the mums can come and chat,
yes,
while their kids are,
yeah,
playing.
Yes.
And you mentioned as well that it is a criteria that that companies have to put a park in, but then they're not fulfilling it.
No. And I think now's the time that like Dartford Borough Council push Crest and like make an example of them, so they don't do this to anyone else, because it'll just keep going on and on in all different areas. If they build the houses and then they're done, they've had their money, they've left the park, they've left it to get in the state, so now's the time to council need to push them as hard as they can and just show them that they can't get away with it.
Gary Turner is the West Hill Neighbourhood Coordinator.
Unfortunately, we've been brought here again to raise the awareness that this park is still closed after 15 months. And what we're learning is there's actually an accountability of Crest Nicholson, the developer. A section 106, I believe, is the notice, which it means that they have a obligation to the local residents to keep this park maintained and fit for purpose. And we just can't believe, to be honest, we're still here after challenging them, you know, trying to work with them. I know the council's been trying to speak to them, but how are they allowed to get away with kicking this can down the road? I just don't understand.
Crest Nicholson have apologised for the delay in reopening the play area and works underway to replace some equipment.
Kent Online reports.
This is our most read story on the website today. A videographer has hit back after complaints from several couples who were let down on their wedding day. Well, Lucy joins me now with more on this for the podcast. So, Lucy, what exactly are people saying?
Well, Kent Online has spoken to dozens of brides who've had issues with services provided by Wallflower Weddings based in Tunbridge. One of the couples, Shania and Jake, paid £600 to the woman who runs the company, Sarah Stanton, only to receive an email on the morning of their wedding saying she couldn't make it. Jess and Connor also received a cancellation message on their big day, which they described as very flaky. Another bride who didn't want to be named says she and her husband have been waiting over a year for her wedding video to be edited and sent over.
And what impact has this had on people, Lucy?
Well, as you can imagine, it's caused a lot of stress for couples who are celebrating such an important day. Some of them received the messages in the early hours of the morning, leaving them rushing to find a replacement when they should have been enjoying getting ready to get married. Others were uncertain if Sarah was going to turn up. Some of the reasons she gave included family emergencies and issues with pets.
And I understand we've spoken to Sarah to get her side of things.
Yes, that's right. She hasn't exactly explained why she left it until the day of the weddings to cancel, but says she has refunded everyone she let down. She started her business in 2021 and says she wanted to provide beautiful, high-quality wedding videos that fit within any budget, but was left struggling to cover the costs. Sarah now claims to be suffering from abuse and slander from couples, which has affected her mental health. She's increased her prices so she can outsource the editing to try and get videos back to people more quickly.
Lucy, thank you ever so much. A teenage boy's died after it's thought he inhaled deodorant at his home in Canterbury. 13-year-old Nicky Lowther, who went to Canterbury Academy, has been described as happy and cheeky by his family. A petition's been started calling for an age restriction on the sale of aerosols. It's been signed by more than 2,000 people. There are calls for a review of a busy road in Deal amid concerns for the safety of pedestrians. People living near the A258 London Road have reported badly parked cars, narrow pavements and a lack of places to cross. Data shows 15 incidents over the last 5 years. Roads bosses say they'll work with the town council to discuss and design solutions. There are calls again for dog owners to keep pets on leads near sheep following yet another fatal attack in Kent. One animal died in the most recent incident at Wolverton Farm near Dover. The farmer there is calling for anyone using the footpath on the edge of his field to show more respect.
Kent Online reports.
Now, Arena mums urging us all to be safe in the sun. son after being diagnosed with skin cancer. Natasha Eaton noticed a new mole on her tummy that started to get bigger. Tests later revealed it was a melanoma and had spread, and that left her needing a mastectomy. I've been chatting to Natasha about her story.
It was pretty much 2 years ago. It was the year I was turning 40, and it was our 10th wedding anniversary as well. And I noticed a mole had come up on my tummy. Didn't really think too much of it. I think I then sort of vaguely, towards the end of August, sort of thought, oh, it's got a lot. It had changed quite a bit. And because of the celebrations and things that were happening that year, I'd been sort of tracking myself by taking photos to see progress. So I could look back and see that the mole had actually changed quite a bit since maybe sort of April time. And so I went and had it checked. They weren't too concerned, but they kind of thought, you know, until it's removed, can't tell. And when it was removed, it was, I had a phone call to say, can you bring someone with you when you come to get your results? And as soon as you get that phone call, you just think, this is not going to be good news. So it was stage 2B melanoma. I then had to have a sentinel lymph node biopsy, which tracks where that piece of skin drains to in your lymphatic system. And when they did that biopsy, they found that it had actually gone to my lymph nodes. So it becomes stage 3. So I was offered this, there's a new form of treatment that they're trialing called immunotherapy. And I had 6 months of immunotherapy. But unfortunately, in November 2023, one morning getting ready for school, my daughter noticed a tiny little lump that had come up on my nipple, just randomly. She said, "Mommy, what's that? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Panic set in. I phoned my team, and they were amazing. Had me up there that day. Got the results of that biopsy, and it was the melanoma had come back. And when they'd also done a full body scan, they'd noticed there was a pocket in my breast that they weren't sure about. So we biopsied that. And on the 2nd of January, I found out that I had melanoma in my breast as well. So I had a 4-centimetre tumour of melanoma in my breast. So I had a single-side mastectomy on the 15th of January.
Is that quite unusual, Natasha? Because I'd not heard before that, you know, that the cancer could spread like that or be found in well, particularly within the breast. It sounds quite unusual.
It is quite unusual, but I think the thing that we all sort of forget is that it's all skin, and our skin is our biggest organ. So I think that's also one of the things about melanoma is that it can just, I think they say the symbol of melanoma is one of those dandelions, you know, like the fairies that kids chase, because you know when you blow them, they just go everywhere, don't they? And you never know where the seeds are going to pop up. And I think that's what happens with melanoma. It can just appear anywhere. So while it's unusual for it to spread to the breast, it does happen. Obviously, it's happened to me. I'm not the first person it's happened to. So yeah, it's not something you hear about on a daily basis, because obviously we generally associate a mastectomy with breast cancer, which I haven't had. I've actually had skin cancer in my breast.
And obviously it's great that you're raising awareness. We've had some really hot weather at the moment. We always associate melanomas with sun and exposure to the sun. Is that something that you had done when you were younger? Had you always liked being out in the sun, or were you normally quite careful?
As a child of the 80s, we didn't really, you know, we weren't as aware, or there wasn't as much information as we've got now. So, you know, I can remember going to the beach with my brother or being on holiday. I wouldn't say I've ever been a sun worshipper. I can't sit in the sun, especially since having children. I mean, I get too tetchy sitting in the sun. I did do sunbeds. I had a course of sunbeds before I got married. And I think I now look back and think I was really naive, because I thought it's never going to happen to me. I could probably give you a list of maybe 50 other people that I would have thought would have ended up in this situation and not me.
We really appreciate Natasha sharing all that information with us to raise awareness. Well, Beth Vincent is from Cancer Research UK, and she's been telling us specifically what to look out for.
There are a few different signs and symptoms of skin cancer. Lots of us are familiar with a new or a changing mole as something that could be a sign of skin cancer, but it's not just that. It's actually any unusual change to a patch of your skin. That could be a patch of skin that changes color. It could be a new mark or a freckle. It could be an ulcer, a sore that doesn't heal or is very itchy or scabbing over for a really long time, or even a lump. Basically, anything unusual for you when it comes to your skin, please talk to your doctor. It probably won't be cancer, but if it is, spotting it early can make all the difference.
I suppose it can be tempting to put things off, can't it? If we're sort of worried about something, we're in denial a little bit, or we think, oh, this isn't going to be anything, I'll just ignore it. But how dangerous can that be?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It can be really easy for us to kind of hope for the best. And I really do understand that. But when it comes to cancer, the earlier we spot it, the more likely treatment is to be successful. And in lots of times, most cases, in fact, it probably isn't going to be cancer, but spotting it early really can make a huge, huge difference. So you know your body best. You know if something's not right for you. If that happens, please do talk to your doctor.
And is there a specific type of person who's more at risk of skin cancer? I mean, is it just people who love to get out and sunbathe, or should we all be thinking about it?
Everybody needs to be thinking about sun safety. So melanoma, which I'm talking about today, and is the most serious type of skin cancer. Actually, around 9 in 10 cases of melanoma could be prevented by staying safe in the sun. And that goes for everybody. And when I say staying safe in the sun, what I mean is spending time in the shade, especially in the middle of the day, covering up with clothes, a hat and sunglasses, and also applying sunscreen generously and regularly. And we actually need to be thinking about that from mid-March right the way through to mid-October, not just on those really hot sunny days. So everybody, please think about it. But you are correct. Some people are at an especially high risk. And those people are people with a lighter skin tone, light coloured hair or eyes, lots of moles or freckles, a personal history of sunburn, and a family history of skin cancer. So those people, please do take extra care, but everybody should be doing those three steps to sun safety.
Kent Online News.
The police helicopter has been used to search for suspects after a man was attacked by two men on motorbikes. It happened in Lodge Hill Lane in Chattenden yesterday afternoon. Over the weekend. So far, no one's been arrested. The people behind a huge housing development in Faversham say it'll be one of the most environmentally friendly net zero neighbourhoods in the UK. Prince William's Duchy of Cornwall have come up with the plans for land near Brenly Corner. They also claim there'll be 20% fewer car trips compared to similar size estates by encouraging the use of public transport or walking. A Maidstone office block is set to be converted into flats. Priory Gate on Union Street was built in the early 90s, but several units have been vacant for the past couple of years. The owners say the site could be turned into 15 apartments. Next, and a food van run by volunteers at a youth football club in Medway has been broken into and vandalised. Ketchup and mayo was smeared up the walls of Peckish at Woodpecker FC in Stroud. Hot dogs, buns and around 70 cans of drink were also stolen. Well, our reporter Ellie Hodgson has been speaking to the chairman of Woodpecker FC, Michael Winfield, and Carly Loden, who's the Peckish manager.
Just a devastation. Yeah. You know, you work so hard and you're doing it for, you know, none of us are getting paid for it. We're doing it just to put something back into our community, etc. And then you see that devastation on there, it just breaks your heart.
I took it really personally. I felt like it had happened. It was mine and it happened to me, really.
Yeah.
Made me cry, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because just the pointlessness of it, do you know what I mean? Just for fun, for what, 5 minutes of fun? But the damage they've caused, you know, it will take a lot longer than 5 minutes to put right.
I think it's just like now it's made us so aware. You know, I'm coming down here on a regular basis, almost daily, just checking the site, which is hard when you've got your own full-time job as well. And I'm coming down here and just checking, make sure the site's safe and secure. You know, they tried to obviously break into our storage container. It's now just got to a point where we've always had them trespass before and during the school holidays. And whilst it's just a bit of an irritation, they've never really caused a problem because they've not been causing any damage, just lots of litter everywhere, etc., which we end up tidying up, which is fine. But now that we're experiencing or on the wrong end of criminal damage now. It's taken things to a different level now, and we just can't be comfortable with these people coming over into the field if that's how they're going to treat it.
What is your sort of intention or message through doing this story? If there are the people out there that hear about this on a different level, you know, what would that you like them to think or do, or what would you like to come from this story?
I'd just like them to think about their actions, really. You know, for every action there's a consequence, and you know, what they may have seen as a bit of fun, the consequences to us are massive, and that's what they don't realise. You know, they might have been in there for 5, 10, 15 minutes trashing the place and thinking it's a great laugh, but they don't have an idea of the impact it has on us as a football club and the wider community that come and support the football club.
A lorry park off the M20 is set to double in size. Plans have been submitted to increase capacity at the road chef services near Maidstone and Hollingbourne from 55 lorries to 106. It's hoped it'll reduce the number of HGVs parking in unsuitable locations. A rare bird that used to be extinct in Kent has hatched for the first time in 200 years. The nest of red-billed choughs was found at Dover Castle in May, a year after they were introduced as part of a rewilding project. The birth is being seen as a major milestone. And a Kent beach has been named today as one of the best in the world. Dungeness is on a list of the 50 greatest beaches in the Telegraph. It's been praised for its unique landscapes and wildlife.
Kent Online Sports.
We're starting off at the Olympics, and Kent's Dina Asher-Smith goes in the semi-finals of the women's 200 metres later. She made it through comfortably after finishing second in her heat yesterday. It was after a disappointing 100, though, for the sprinter, who failed to make the final. Meantime, Pembury's Emily Craig has been speaking after winning gold. She narrowly missed out on a medal with partner Imogen Grant in Tokyo, but there was no doubt with Friday's win in the double lightweight sculls.
I'm not sure if it'll ever fully sink in. It just feels too unbelievable that we did it. We were unbeaten for 3 years and finished it off with quite an epic final.
Emily, what have the past 3 years been like for you mentally, just bouncing back from that?
I think it's been a really interesting journey. I think at some point last year, when we kind of had gone through a year unbeaten and then another half of a year unbeaten, and we were coming up to Worlds, and I suddenly had this realization of like, oh my God, I'm the athlete I had always dreamed of being. Oh God, it doesn't get any easier. Oh no. And luckily, I think we've kind of moved past that this year and really kind of just leaned into enjoying it a lot more. And that final was really satisfying because I think it was just us at our best.
What do you mean by it doesn't get any easier?
Well, you kind of think, like, you look at crews who, you know, win consistently, like in the past, you know, watching like Heather and Helen race, watching like Eric and Paymish race in the Kiwi pair, and you kind of think they make it look so easy, and then you get there and you realize it is so much hard work to stay there on top.
And Emily, it's been such an incredible time these past few weeks for the rowing team. What has kind of sparked that, do you think?
I think it's really been the culmination of a great 3 years as a team. We had our new performance director Louise come in, new head coach for the women's team Andrew Randall, and you know, it's just been up and up and up. And you know, Tokyo, we came away with no medals on the women's side, and now we have two gold medals, a silver and a bronze, and God, I hope that women's eight comes home with a medal, because it'll just be incredible.
Well, she mentioned there the women's eight, they did go on to win a medal. They got bronze while the men took gold. On to football now, and Gillingham's pre-season friendlies finished with a 1-1 draw at Woking over the weekend. New loan signing Jacob Wakeling scored his first goal for the club, and manager Mark Bonner spoke to our reporter Luke Cordell after the final whistle.
You had two different kind of games, haven't you? You had Southampton in the week and then this one at the weekend. Very different games, were they?
Oh yeah, really different. Like, really different. I think Southampton might have had 11 entries into the final third in 90 minutes, and they probably had 11 in the first 15 minutes because it's like a much more direct game. But I think that's what we set pre-season for, really. You try and get lots of different types of game in. You don't want the same thing lots of time. You try and mirror that you're going to play against different things throughout the year, different types of teams, different styles, and it allows us to work on many different things. And I think I've said all the way through, 5 weeks in, without full availability of players as well, we're going to end up keep developing and improving in lots of situations. So we've got to try and make sure that we're at our best level we can be to get a good result next week, and then same again and rinse repeat for every 3 days for about 9 months. So yeah, I like the fact that we've played different types of game. I like that this one was today because it's more like a league game will look, I think. And we've got to make it the best version of us in a game like that from next week.
How would you try and assess the whole of pre-season? Difficult to,
yeah, in a few words. Dangerous to be honest. I think some people can go into the season feeling really happy about themselves, and some like really desperate about, oh my goodness, where are we as a team? Like, you see that across the board. I mean, in the end, we've done 5 weeks of really good work, building some partnerships, building some understanding in our style. Loads of improvements still to make. I'm really happy with the lads. I've really enjoyed working with them, and I'm really looking forward to see the behavioural shift that happens now, because the pressure starts and we've got to be fearless and go for games in the right way, and we've got to show real personality in our performances. Players will start to not make teams and maybe not come on, and the fairness and the equal pre-season time that's there goes, and then you start to see, right, that's where the spirit of the team gets built. And yeah, we've got a great first month to look forward to, so really looking forward to a busy week to prepare for that, and then for that being the first of many games.
As you heard, the Jewels get their League 2 campaign underway against Carlisle next Saturday. Cricket, and Kent have lost their latest One Day Cup match against Middlesex. The Spitfires were bowled out for 204 at Beckenham. The visitors beat that target within 32 overs. Next up is a trip to Worcestershire on Wednesday. And Kent's Zach Crawley has been ruled out of the upcoming Test series between England and Sri Lanka. The opening batter's got a fractured finger. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.